Yoga in all its forms has been a support for me in my life, through all the highs and lows. It's opened my mind and my heart in ways I never knew were possible. It has been a teacher, a taskmaster, and a friend. This podcast is an offering. I wish to share the teachings of yoga with you as a tool to help navigate life. Namaste, and welcome. Welcome. I'm so happy you're here. So I've been thinking about friendship, companionship, connection, and wholeness, I suppose. And in these reflections and in these thoughts and in my writings through my journaling, it is often pondered what does it really feel like to be in the company of a true friend? And for me, I guess I recognize, well, first an excitement and an anticipation of that communion, that connection, that being in the presence of a friend, a true friend. And there's also a tremendous ease that I experience. It's like an exhaling deep into the self, into myself. It's when you are with someone and it requires little to no effort. The silences that you share speak volumes. The union that is created when you are together is sacred. You feel with a handful of people, if you're fortunate, or one or two, if you're like most, when you're in the company of such a friend, your shoulders are lower than usual. Your pulse is slower. Your breath is deeper. Your smile lasts longer. And your eyes, you just can't see them, but you know they twinkle a bit more than usual. And I wonder what makes these relationships what they are. Is it a like-mindedness? Is it a dance? Is it a rhythm? Is it a shared pulse? Is it an energy that is simply in alignment? And you can't have that true, authentic alignment with many. Not the deep connection that I am reflecting on. I think that would be exhausting. And of course, when we think about having that kind of sacred union, I think if we think of it in mass, big numbers, it's watered down then, right? So it loses its sacredness, if you will, or it's special. It's not as special if it's with many. And you can have longtime friends that you've known for decades or many years, and there's a certain connection there where you can almost say if you've lived long enough that they knew you when, and they know from whence you came, and kind of they know your origin story if they've been along for the ride for many chapters and you for them. But you can meet someone or someone's later in your life that you feel safe enough to share your origin story with. You feel, I think that's really a key word too. There's those that have known you all along the way. There is a certain comfort and safety in that. But the word of safety, of being safe, you know, Helen Keller has that famous quote where safety is an illusion. But there is a sense of comfort and ease. There is a sense of trust that you may not feel with that longer term relationship. And yet there's someone that has been brought into your life, or again, maybe more than one person that is brought into your life later, that there's just this alchemy to it. There's just this state of being that it feels as if, it can feel as if there have been many lifetimes shared. I am blessed to have a few of those friendships, those connections. There is one for me that stands out amongst all others. And what it feels like is it feels like, you know, and it affirms your sense of self, like, there I am. And this can happen and manifest in different ways in our lives, this, oh, there I am. And I talk about this from time to time, but when it's with a companion or with a friend, that feeling of, it's like you're meeting yourself or another layer of yourself that is only brought out in this sacred union, in this yoga. This yoga. Yoga is a union. It is a yoking. That is what yoga is. And so when you are in this union with this friend, with this companion, you are unable to deny that you are wholly, fully present and feeling wholly, fully yourself and safe to be able to be all of you. And it will not be criticized, or it will not be judged, or it will not be talked about to someone else later. Like, oh, I was with Jackie yesterday, and, you know, she said this thing, and it was like really quirky, and, you know, sometimes she can be so awkward, or you know that will never happen, because there are these few friendships and few relationships where you are, without having to put it in words, because you can't. I sound like I am now, but in the moment with the friendship, with that union, you are so fully in a state of yoga that words do not do it justice. And this may sound perhaps exaggerated or dramatized. I think that's the word. But when you know it, you know it. Now, some of us have had union in this way, friendship, companionship in this way with someone who is no longer in our lives. That happens. Of course, we lose that person or a couple of those people. And that loss is really great. For me, that loss is less of a loss than other people that I have grieved in my life, because it transcends time. It transcends worlds. When you have the experience of being in relationship, companionship with someone who makes you feel or affords you the feeling of being wholly, fully, authentically yourself, I have found that I am able to connect with the people that have made me feel that way after they've gone in a deeper, richer way than I can connect with the spirits of other people that I've loved that have passed on. But in the here and now, finding these people in our lives, whether it's a tribe of one or a tribe of five, if you are able to make that heart connection, you are truly, truly blessed. And if you feel by listening to this that you don't know what I'm talking about and you don't have people like that in your life or a person like that in your life, there's a couple of things I offer to you. One is you probably do, but in order to truly be held in this way, you need to also be able to hold someone else in this way. And it's not, like I said earlier, it's easeful, it's effortless. It's a union, a companionship, a friendship that comes out of nowhere and is sparked organically. But if you are not able to hold yourself, love, and be in yourself in a way that is true and authentic and real and accepting and non-judging, it's going to be really challenging for you to be in communion with someone, anyone else that way. So first, what I offer is really take time to reflect on the people closest to you. Friends, family tends to have too much of a narrative and too much of an origin story that can be prickly, even if you don't think it is, because it's ancestral. Friends, companions tend to not be, of the kind that I am speaking, tend to not be blood related. It's just so. But reflect upon the friendships that you have. Someone once asked me, why does it seem so much easier to be, and I'm paraphrasing what the question was, but to be closer and feel richer with my girlfriends than, say, with a sister? And that's exactly why, because there's no prickly ancestral blood-related origin story with a girlfriend. So it's like you're two mighty oaks for one another in the same forest. Your roots are not intertwined in a messy way. There's no root rot anywhere. And so reflect upon the friendships that you have at present and the companionships. And as you do, you will inevitably start to see, you know, who do I look forward to being with? Who, when I think of this or that person, do I feel excitement? Do I feel a charge? Do I feel an anticipation? I find that these certain friendships of mine that are what I'm describing, they tend to make me want to be a better me just by the nature of their being, of their existing. And there's some questions that you can ask when you're reflecting upon your friendships and your companionships. And it's really about taking note of the energy that embodies these relationships. So simple questions like, who do you look forward to spending time with? So, you know, what do you get? Do you get like that feeling of anticipation or excitement? Or do you get that feeling of, oh, this is a bit of a chore? I'd rather not. I hope she cancels or he cancels, you know. But, you know, look at that a little bit. Who makes you feel uplifted and understood? You know, so a lot of us can make each other feel like lifted, like we can build people up inauthentically, superficially. But who makes you feel uplifted and understood? Like when you're around them, or when you're engaging with them, you don't have to explain yourself. It's like, you know, they get you. They just get you. And and then conversely, like we said, with the spending time, who, if there is anyone, do you consistently find yourself, you know, you put off seeing them, or you like if they text you, you're like, ah, you know, I don't want to respond to that. These are just questions to reflect upon. It's that whole black and white thing. who drains you. You know, when you reflect on your companionships and your friendships, and don't linger too long on this. It's just kind of like, you'll know, like who's an energy vampire, or who psychically drains you, or who just does it feel physically draining to be around. Now, this is not so that you single out and harshly judge that relationship or that person. No, this is so that you can, you know, juxtapose it against the one or two friendships that feel like this sacred union, right? So we all have people that we feel drained by, and we all have people that we drain. That's a, you know, not a one-way street, but it's just so that you can go, oh yeah, that person makes me feel different than this other person. Okay, I get it. Okay, so that person is not my sacred union. And that's all. Just leave it at that. We don't have to eviscerate them. And then you'll see, like, sometimes there's somebody that when you're in conversation with them, you kind of feel like you're zoning out when they talk. And that is less, sometimes it's a you and the space you're in kind of thing. You just can't take in their conversation for whatever reason. But if it's a regular habit, you know, if it's a regular occurrence, sometimes it will be because the person talking, you're zoning out because it's not a conversation that's a union. That person is talking about themselves. There are people that just can make the entire conversation about themselves. And like, you could be on, let's say you're on a phone call with them. You could be on a phone call with them for 30 minutes and your airtime is the last three. They give you like the last 3 to 5 minutes. Like, so how are you? You know, and what's going on with you? But you know that you have limited time. So that's a draining person. You feel that. So again, all I say is take that and, you know, it's like a scientific experiment. You're going to measure that against how it feels to be in conversation with this other person. And therein lies your sacred union, your sacred friendship, if you will. And I find it very, I don't know what the word is, I guess back to affirming or validating or confirming when I am around these certain friends that feel sacred to me. I know that I am in a state of yoga. And it reminds me who I am. So after the experience of being together is over, you kind of come back home, you know, to your physical home, and you just feel different. Things can even look different in your home. You stand a little taller. Notice these things. You know, you look upon your things in your home with, you know, a continuation of, oh, there I am. Again, you're not thinking this, but there is a certain sense of I am-ness that is bolstered up because you've been with a person that is so authentically your friend. So I would be remiss if I didn't also add that for me, this is going to sound strange to kind of cap this off with this, but I think I'll cap this off with one of my favorite Mary Oliver poems so we can wrap it up on that note. But for me, my greatest companion, my longest relationship has been with my pets. Not longest in years, because unfortunately they don't live as long as we do, which is just really a sick joke that for me, it's, you know, my dogs, that we lose them so quickly in the scheme of things. But so what I mean by this is that from a very young age, I took great comfort and felt very safe in the companionship of my dogs, the many that I have had over my lifetime. And I'm sure many of you can relate to that, to your pets being a place where you feel safe and unconditionally loved. And I'm not going to harp on that unconditional word as I can, but a safety, a trust, a faith, a love that when I look at my companion dogs and they look at me, something about being blessed to be their humans makes me feel like I must be doing something right if I get to have these relationships with these amazing, supportive, kind, present dogs. And right now I'm living with two of mine and one of my sons. So I've got a Yorkie, a Samoyed, and his Rottweiler. And as many of you that listen to the podcast know, I very suddenly lost my beloved Bodie back in September. And it's still really hard. And I know many of you have lost pets, and I've lost many pets, but losing that companion really activated a lot of traumatic loss in me that maybe had been unrecognized. But to know the love of a dog for me has been a reminder that I am love, and that I know how to love, and that I know how to serve, and that I am loved. And I have a couple of friendships that feel that way as well. And I know you do too. And I hope that this episode reminds you of that, and maybe reinvigorates some friendships that you'd like to revisit. But absolutely vital, in my opinion, is that when we are in union with these friends, it is a mirror of us. And to be the greatest friend to yourself, and to love yourself, and to care for yourself, and to be reminded of your beauty, your grace, your all of your offerings. That is what this kind of friendship reminds us of. So I'm going to share with you one of my favorite Mary Oliver poems just to wrap this up. It may or may not be relatable. It doesn't matter. I've just had this poem kind of coming at me the last few days. So here we have Mary Oliver, the Buddha's last instruction. Make of yourself a light, said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the East begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness to send up the first signal, a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, he lay down between two sala trees, and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward. It thickens and settles over the fields. Around him, the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills, like a million flowers on fire. Clearly I'm not needed, yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd. So make of yourself a light, was his last words, the Buddha's last words. My words that find me as the sun rises in the east, and in both of the bedrooms that I am blessed to inhabit, my sacred space, one in my home in Brooklyn and one in my home in Woodstock. The sun rises in the east and shines brightly into those rooms. And as it awakens me, I kid you not, every morning, I cannot believe I get another day at this. And I say to myself quietly, how may I serve today? How may I serve today? So I offer that you reflect on your friendships, your companionships, and those places where you feel wholly, fully, truly your I am-ness. Thank you for listening. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May all beings be healthy and strong. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings live with ease. Namaste.